Well, most of us, I would say, know the story of Aladdin, and especially the genie in the bottle, where Aladdin rubs the lamp and out comes the genie with the wishes for the person holding the lamp. But I love the way that Disney has the genie introduce himself. He comes out and says, "What do you wish of me? The ever impressive, the long contained, the often imitated but never duplicated genie of the bottle." Often we can sometimes muse, and maybe you said it yourself, when something isn't quite going the way you want, saying, "Ah, if only I had a magic lamp and a genie." And then what would be our wishes? Often it's to give us riches, give us health, long life. You name it, and it usually has to do with satisfying some worldly selfish desire. Now, there are tons of genie-in-the-bottle jokes out there, and unfortunately, some of them are not quite acceptable, I think, to be repeated in church. But one that I find quite humorous says a man rubbed the lamp and out popped the genie and says, "Okay, what is it that you wish?" The man says, "I want all the ladies to love me." Poof! He was turned into a bar of chocolate. I personally would want it to be a dark chocolate, but it is funny, and though often I think sometimes, as I've said, things are funny because they hold kernels of truth. Our wishes are usually about something we want, we desire. And sadly, we have a tendency to turn Jesus into our own personal genie in the bottle. We treat our prayers, we treat our worship as kind of our newest kind of, we get three more wishes, right, Jesus? Give him the wishes that we think he's expected to grant for us. And in our gospel today, we see Jesus ask Bartimaeus, "What do you want me to do for you?" Now, Bartimaeus could have treated Jesus like his own personal little genie, but he doesn't. But I think to truly comprehend what's going on in the scene, we need to look at the verses that come right before our passage. Now, if we hadn't celebrated St. Luke's Day last week, it would have been actually our gospel reading in the lectionary. And so you're going to get it from me today. So we go to Mark 10, 35 to 45, the verses right before this encounter with Bartimaeus. And here the gospel writer tells us, "James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came forward to Jesus and said to him, 'Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask of you.'" Kind of sounds like a genie in the bottle, doesn't it? And Jesus said to them, "What is it you want me to do for you?" And they said to him, "Grant us to sit, one at your right hand and one at your left, in your glory." But Jesus said to them, "You do not know what you are asking. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink or be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with?" They replied, "We are able." Then Jesus said to them, "The cup that I drink, you will drink. And with the baptism with which I am baptized, you will be baptized. But to sit at my right hand or at my left hand is not mine to grant, but it is for those for whom it has been prepared." When the 10 heard of this, they began to be angry with James and John. So Jesus called them and said to them, "You know that among the Gentiles, those whom they recognize as their rulers lord it over them, and their great ones are tyrants over them. But it is not so among you. But whoever wishes to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wishes to be first among you must be slave of all. For the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many." Now see, James and John are part of the inner circle. They're one of the first that come and follow Jesus. One of the first ones to be disciples, so to speak. They're the ones that are supposed to get it. They're the ones that are supposed to have the vision and clearly see the truth of who Jesus is, what he's come for, and the gospel that he's offering out. Remember the good news that we heard last week, the gospel, for those of us that are poor excuses of human beings? that we are without hope on our own. That anything we do is never going to be good enough to earn our way into God's presence. And yet, in spite of that, Jesus thinks we're worth redeeming. Jesus believes that we are worth his sacrifice to bring us the release, to bring us the freedom, the vision and the sight to know and be able to recognize the reality of God in our midst now and for all eternity. We so often in our society talk about healing the world's woes. You look in the idea of the violence that we have in our society, the greed, the injustice. But sadly, we look to only legislation and social justice to cure it. Those are important. But honestly, the only way there will be any change in this evil, fallen world is if we bring individuals into the community of believers. If we bring people into relationship with Jesus so they can be transformed into the human beings they are meant and created to be. But to both James and John, the insiders, and to Bartimaeus, the outsider, Jesus poses the same question. What do you want me to do for you? And I think he asks us the exact same question, both individually, but also as a congregation. How do we answer? Do we answer out of our fallen humanity? Or do we answer out of our faith? Because I look at these two interactions and wonder, who really is blind? Because it appears that the man that was physically blind saw better than the sighted disciples as to who Jesus really was, who Jesus really is. So one commentator says, this story is about physical blindness. I mean, they were walking along and this man did not have sight and Jesus physically healed him. And so it appears that that's what this story is about. But later in the story, it seems fairly clear that while the act of healing that took place is of physical nature, perhaps it has something to do with something a little deeper, something more. Bartimaeus was blind, he regains his ability to see, but in spite of this evidence, whether or not Jesus' healing of this blind man was simply a miracle story about a physical healing of a physical ailment, or whether it was some kind of blindness that the gospel writer had in mind. Because even though a physical healing took place, that wasn't the most important thing. The most important thing was the healing of the spiritual blindness. Because the issue is not whether Jesus could miraculously cure people's bodies so much as whether Christ can miraculously cure our souls. See, Bartimaeus' faith was first that he recognized he was blind. And he believed that through Jesus, God could heal him. And he refused to give up, didn't he? I mean, he's hushed and told to be quiet the first time, so what does he do? He doesn't sink away. He cries out even more loudly. He causes more of a commotion. He refuses to give up. His faith made him well. His faith healed his blindness so that he was able to get up and follow Jesus on the way. And it's interesting because if we look at the rest of this gospel, the way that Jesus is walking is towards Jerusalem, towards his death. That's what Bartimaeus chose to join him in. I also think it's interesting because he tosses off his cloak. What if Jesus hadn't healed him? You think he'd ever find that cloak again? That's how much he had faith that Jesus was who he believed him to be. See, so often we're unable to recognize where we've gone blind. I mean, look at our society. I was reading something the other day that the show The View, which personally I've never watched. I think I've watched once and turned it off halfway through. Well, I guess the other day they were actually mocking people who were virgins that had chosen to remain pure until they were married. That somehow these individuals seeking to obey God's sexual ethic were just out of touch with reality. that that's so passé, and that anyone seeking to do that is just a joke and should be mocked. We have become blind in our sexual ethic within our society. But so we've done the same in our churches. And no matter where you stand on the issue of climate change, we have become blind to the charge that God has given us in creation to be good stewards of what He has given us. To be good stewards of creation itself. Of the food and water, the electricity, the material goods that we have. Because we've become a disposable society, thinking that somehow anything we have somehow created. Thinking that we are entitled to whatever you want to fill in the blank with. That we're entitled to health. That we're entitled to wealth. We're entitled to happiness. We're often blind to the fact that we desperately need Jesus in our day-to-day lives, each moment, not just when we come here. And we need Him not just to give us what we want, but honestly, to save us from ourselves. And we might give lip service to our ultimate need for salvation, but I believe we're often blind to that as well as we go through our daily life. We often settle for second best because it's what we know. It's what's easy. We're happily blind to our own lostness, blind to the feast that Jesus wants us to join, wants us to consume and enjoy. C.S. Lewis, in the last book of his Narnia series called The Last Battle, we come to a place where everything has culminated, and of course, you know, the good guys win. Narnia is saved. They're all in paradise. It's fabulous. It's beyond anything you could comprehend. The best possible day, in the best possible situation, that's where they are. The sun is shining, it's beautiful grass. They couldn't ask for anything more. But there are these dwarves that are huddled together, refusing to see the reality around them. No matter what anyone says or does, they believe that they are in the dark, that they are just squalor and dirt, that nothing has changed, that they are lost and there's no hope. Aslan himself comes and creates and presents to them this glorious feast, the best Thanksgiving spread that you could ever imagine. But all they see is pig slop. They refuse to acknowledge their own blindness, that they have separated themselves from the one who could free them from that, could free them from the prison of their own making. And Lucy and the others continually try to get them to see reality, but finally Aslan says to them, "You see, they will not let us help them. They have chosen cunning instead of belief." Now, as in seminary, my Old Testament professor said, we all have blinders on to our own kind of personal sins that we don't want to really deal with. And I know I have my blind spots. We all do. But are we willing to acknowledge that there are places that we are blind? Are we willing to try to figure out, well, what am I blind to, Lord? Show me. And are we willing, in our blindness, to cry out to Jesus, knowing that only through His intercession will we be ever able to see clearly? Are we willing to throw off the trappings of this world like Bartimaeus and run after Him, trusting and knowing that He has the power to do what we are incapable of? And then are we truly willing to join Him on the way, to walk with Him towards Jerusalem, walk with Him to the cross once He does heal us? I pray that we would respond, not like the sons of Zebedee, but we would respond like Bartimaeus. Immediately he regained his sight and followed Jesus on the way. Amen.